Spout Blog and the Webby-nominated Film Couch podcast are covering what's truly interesting in the film world every day. Find out why the New York Times says Spout Blog's got it all at blog.spout.com.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Maddie Robinson. This week, Adam and I return from a little fun in the Florida sun to deliver our top five vacation movies.
Plus, The Matadors, our Best of the Almodovar Marathon Awards, Massacre Theater, music by the Josh Davis Band, and a conversation with the stars of the new film, The Visitor.
We'll also recap the highlights and lowlights of our trip to the Sarasota Film Festival, but first, aloha, Adam.
Mahalo.
A schlubby guy gets a gorgeous girl. It must be a Judd Apatow film.
As you know, I love you.
Are you breaking up with me?
We're leading different lives. It's like you're standing on the dock and I'm in the lake.
Sarah, I swear to God, I'll jump in the lake like a merman.
Do you want to put some clothes on?
Would you like to pick out the outfit that you break up with me in?
Sexy crime fighter Sarah Marshall has been spotted cozying up to singer and notorious Lothario Aldous Snow.
She's dating somebody. And until I do the same thing, I'm going to feel like I want to die.
I think that went really well.
Maddie, we've mentioned a few times here on the show that we're currently teaching a class at the University of Chicago on the filmmakers Howard Hawks and Michael Curtiz.
God help us.
Yes, and one of the topics that we've been discussing is the auteur theory, which is one that you are not a big fan of. We will not get into that here, but I thought about it because we're watching a film that, as we joke there in the tease, is a Judd Apatow film, except it's not really. He just produced it. Nicholas Stoller, making his directing debut, is the director of the film Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and Jason Segel, the star, an Apatow regular, is the screenwriter. But if you look at it, I don't know if we can call Judd Apatow an auteur just yet, but there certainly are certain themes that come up again and again in his films. There is certainly that Apatow stamp, and one of those big stamps is these characters who are in this state of arrested adolescence. Mm-hmm. You think of Andy in The 40-Year-Old Virgin. You think of Seth Rogen's character in Knocked Up, and here again in Forgetting Sarah Marshall with Jason Segel. He's a musician. He gets to pretty much just hang out on his couch all day, eat cereal. So we've got some elements of the Apatow formula certainly in this film, including, of course, getting a girl that most people would probably say is above his playing field. We certainly see that theme as well through Apatow's film. So my question for you, and we did just literally walk out of this film, so our reaction here is totally raw. Does the formula still work? Are there any new wrinkles? Do you put this movie on the level with a Knocked Up, with The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and a more recent Apatow production, Superbad, which I know you really enjoyed?
I think this is one of the most sort of formulaic, absolutely absurd revenge fantasies I've ever seen.
Huh.
And I absolutely, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And it's because it plays with the formula so well. And I give all the credit to Jason Segel, not just for his performance, but for the writing, the familiarity of it. We've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been where he is, basically living on the couch. And you talk about adolescence. I don't really think it's a matter of overcoming arrested adolescence in this case. For me, it's more about he's just falling into a rut with this beautiful, wonderful girl. He's a talented guy.
Okay,
he's a good guy. He's falling into a rut. And this material, this basically is our town. This is basically,
wow. You
know, Dead Poets Society. It's saying, you know what? Come on, man. You got to get out there. You got to get up. You got to examine your life a little bit. Don't just take it for granted. And I love the formula that gets played here a little bit, because my problem with Knocked Up was every single time that Catherine Hagel, is that how you pronounce it, was on screen. Because Apatow, he knows his men so well. Basically, they're fully fleshed out characters. They're ugly in appearance. They're ugly in personality, but they're also wonderful guys. They reflect humanity. The women that they're always chasing are always so cardboard, so boopsy-like. Yeah, they're rich. They're gorgeous. But the problem is if you're a successful, talented, funny woman in Hollywood, but you're only average looking, you're never going to get the leading role. Whereas Bill Murray has no problems. Robin Williams has no problem. Jason Segel now has no problems. So they have to go after, yes, these beautiful, gorgeous women, but they're just trophies.
Mm-hmm.
They're just boopsies. Here he gets Mila Kunis, who has just this breathtaking Lauren Bacall stage presence.
Yeah, that's a great comparison.
But at the same token, she's also really funny, really humble, and really one of the girls. So finally, we get to see an Apatow woman, if you will, match an Apatow man, and I loved it, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is really funny. It's a really good movie, and I really love what you said there about the female character, the female lead, because she is by far the most interesting Apatow character we've had so far.
Yeah.
And Jason Segel as well. They're a perfect match because if you think about it, while Seth Rogen's character is hilarious and knocked up and Andy is hilarious and his friends are hilarious and the 40-year-old virgin, the fact is I'm not sure that they're the kind of guys who are really worldly enough to necessarily want to spend a whole lot of time with.
I wouldn't mind spending time with the 40-year-old virgin. And of course, it's his rejection of those friends that really sort
sure.
of, you know, serves that movie. There is a message there.
Yeah, there is. But here in Peter, this character that Jason Segel plays, you've got a guy who is stuck in this arrested adolescence, I would argue. I mean, the fact is when he goes to the doctor, right, to get checked because he thinks he might have an STD, he goes to his old pediatrician.
Right.
Okay, well,
right.
There's a point there to
but
that,
but he also has grown up. He's been able to sustain
yes.
a mature relationship.
Just,
he is in love with this woman.
Right. He's not just a total slacker who you want to kind of say snap out of it like
right.
Seth Rogen, and he's not a total nerd that you might have a hard time hanging out with like Andy Steve Carell in that film. So you've got this great combination of a fully developed female character, Mila Kunis, I'm not sure how to say
right.
her name, but you see her as Jackie on That 70s Show. She is amazing here.
She's fantastic.
She really is amazing. I was really surprised by how good she was. And again, it's one of those things where you can't help but sort of want to compare her to her television character. I watched That 70s Show. I thought she was funny on it. You sort of expect her to be like that then on screen. And she's really not at all. She's grown up here, and she's a fully developed, interesting woman on screen.
Well, I think she's really grown as an actor. I don't think she started out as an actor. I think there's one anecdote that she's told. She basically kind of lied about her age to even get on That 70s Show. I think she may have been a model. I'm not quite sure. And she's kind of rough, especially in those early seasons. And then she really develops this great character with all her hang-ups. And here, I just love it. I have to say it. This is the type of girl, 10 times more hotter, absolutely out of my league, but that I love spending time with, and you love spending time with all the characters in this film. But let's not glaze over the fact that it's absolutely hilarious, and it doesn't overstay its welcome too much, which I think, you know, 40-year-old virgin and Knocked Up are guilty of. And there are just some really, they're not afraid to throw in some really, really great bits and flesh it out with some great character actors like Jack McBriar and so forth. And I love the frank discussions about sex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is. We're, as Americans, it's so taboo, of course, for us to talk about sex and relationships. And I just love the way that they deal with it here. Yeah, you talk about it in a crude way, but at the same time, you know, there are other elements that come out here, too.
And it's less crude, actually, than those other films. It's
much
less
more
vulgar
so.
Than Superbad and those others.
There are some really, really crude moments that are dealt with really well.
Yeah, there are. And I agree with you as well that I'm not sure I would put it up there with Knocked Up and the 40-Year-Old Virgin. I know I said this about Superbad too. I wish I could come up with something more interesting to say. But those films for me did have bigger laughs. Bottom line, they had bigger
really?
Laughs.
Okay.
This film, I don't know that I would say is hilarious. It tends to be a little more serious, actually, I think, throughout this film than some of those others. It doesn't go just for those jokes, but I like that. I like that it's a little more serious. I actually give Nicholas Stoller, the director, a ton of credit because as much as I like those other films, they all had scenes that were probably redundant, that
mm-hmm.
were unnecessary, that I felt like, okay, did we really need that bit? As much as I love Paul Rudd, as much as I love Jonah Hill in a lot of scenes, do you really need every single
exactly.
scene of them
exactly.
indulging every whim and every improvisation that they have? Maybe not. Again, they're ridiculously talented, but sometimes they maybe go too far. Here, this movie is actually structured in a way that it's pretty tight, and even at close to 2 hours, it doesn't feel
right.
too long at all. And I, again, would say that I give Jason Segel credit as an actor, as a writer, and to the director, Nicholas Stoller, that it just feels less indulgent than those other films. And again, I like the way those films indulge a little bit in those scenes, but maybe they go a little bit too far here. I really felt like he knew exactly what Tony was going for throughout the film.
Yeah, when you're right, Adam, and you hit the nail right on the head, because consider Russell Brand here as the other love interest, the guy taking Sarah Marshall away from Jason Segel. In another film, he becomes just a character for laughs. Basically, probably he's going to have too much screen time.
Yeah.
I loved every single time he was on screen because there was something else there.
Yeah.
Wait, so when's the movie coming out?
Mm. It came out.
Did you like it?
The movie?
Yeah.
It was...
awful, bloody film. I say it's just ridiculous. Premise, what would happen if your mobile phone killed you. Why would a mobile phone kill anyone? Doesn't make sense. Like, how can a mobile phone have an agenda and kill people?
I told her that when she read the script.
Yeah, you were the voice of reason, mate.
Like, I tried to be, but she didn't listen. What?
Going around killing people on a mobile phone, like doing murders.
Why couldn't you just take the battery out of the phone?
Right, that's it. The battle's over.
Yeah, we've won.
His character, Russell Brand, is so good here as Aldous Snow, who is this musician. And he's a caricature at first. We see this video,
right.
and you know, the video's ridiculous, and all the sexual moves he's making as he's singing, and he just is a joke. But you think he's going to be this caricature, and you do think he's just going to be really annoying. And then this is where the writing and the directing is really good. You finally get to a point in the film where they have a quiet moment together, mm-hmm. where Jason Segel's character and Aldous Snow are together, and he finally just has to say, damn it, you're cool.
Yep.
And
yep.
We've all been thinking that. Everybody in the theater, at least we, I'm sure, we're sitting there watching going, yeah, you want to hate him so bad because he seems like such this kind of stereotypical rock star and you want to make fun of him. But the fact is, he constantly shows himself to be an interesting, fun character. He, in his performance, Russell Brand, allows that to not just go into the realm of caricature. And I do give him a lot of credit as well as the director. Even as well, I will say Jonah Hill. I've thought that he has been very funny in a lot of these films, but there can be too much Jonah Hill.
Oh, very much so.
And the trailer for this film, there was a scene in the trailer, you hear it constantly, or see it constantly, that I thought was really annoying and not funny at all. The scene where he shows up at the restaurant and says, you know, it's me for dinner. And he goes, oh, just one? Table for one? You know, no, right. There's nobody with him, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's not really that funny. It actually seemed kind of obnoxious to me. Well, they cut that out of the film. It's much funnier the way it plays out in the film. They don't go for that easy joke. Again, you see that sometimes where the trailer doesn't match what ends up in the final film. But those performances, he finds a way to not give you too much. Again, when we talk about the indulgence, not give you too much Paul Rudd. I could have used a little more Paul Rudd.
Yeah,
even.
Exactly. What I like that it didn't become is that, you know, a bunch of them sitting around smoking a bong at the cabana, you know, basically having fun. And, you know, that's what Knocked Up basically becomes a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Is saying, oh, man, I really like those guys. Yeah, they're kind of really being funny. But, hey, let's move the plot forward a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait to see this film again.
Yeah, I look forward to it as well. What did you think of Kristen Bell, who plays Sarah Marshall, Veronica Mars on TV? She is the other love interest. I think she, unfortunately, is in a really unfortunate position that not only is Mila Kunis amazing, mm-hmm. but she's the more fun character. She's
yeah.
the character that we want to see end up with our hero, Peter. So you have to see Sarah Marshall
yeah,
as the villain.
She's got that sort of Katherine Heigl-esque to her.
She
you
does,
know,
yeah.
I have the same reaction to her. I'm just like, oh, why? Why are you wasting your time? Man, I've been there. I know it sucks. I know, you know, there's empty bottles of liquor on your floor. You can't get up in your pajamas for 5 days. It's awful. I have been there. I have broken down. Dude, you just got to get over her. She's not worth it. She is basically David Caruso on CSI. And
right.
When you see the film, you'll get that
oh,
joke.
Those moments are
oh,
hilarious.
Billy Baldwin playing
a David Caruso kind of role.
Nailing it.
Yeah.
Taking a page
really
out of his brother's book.
The details are right. I mean, you said you've yeah. been there. I haven't been there since high school, I'll say. It's been a long time since I've had that heartbreak. But a lot of the situations that we see many of these characters in, the details are so right, and
yeah.
we don't want to get into what those details are. You just have to watch the film. Some of them we can't discuss on air, being a family show and all, but a film we obviously enjoyed and recommend that you do see if you get a chance. Forgetting Sarah Marshall is in theaters everywhere now. If you agree or disagree with our takes, email feedback@filmspotting.net. You can also leave us a voicemail by calling 206-203-2463.
All right, time for a quick break. Up next, Film Spotting gets a double dose of Werner Herzog at the Sarasota Film Festival, and Richard Jenkins and Hiya Mubis explain what drew them to Tom McCarthy's latest film, The Visitor. Stay with us.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Crossman with feedback on your top 5 concert scenes. And from one nerd to another, Mr. Robinson, I am not worthy. Your top five list had me cheering in the car as each pick was more inspired than the rest. And to quote James Carville from Old School, I have no response. That was perfect.
Hi guys, this is Oscar from Stockholm. I just listened to the top five concert scenes list and I have to say, a little disappointed. I know Maddie hates Black Snake Moan, but Adam, what the hell?
This here song from back in the day, 1962.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Maddie Robinson. I'm Adam Kempinar. A couple of really fun voicemails there, Maddie. Oscar in Sweden. We love Oscar. He's really upset that we left off Black Snake Moan. No surprise there, though, that you left it off your top five concert
scenes. Not one of my favorite films. I'll actually take Johnny Lee Hooker's performance in the Maxwell Street market in Blues Brothers over that performance of Annie Mae any day.
Well, I don't think that's too much of a bold claim there, but I really did like that scene. And all I can say, Oscar, by way of apologizing, is I certainly considered Black Snake Moan hustle and flow, too. When you think of great music scenes, I think of those moments in Craig Brewer's films. But the one reason it stayed off is I actually think the better performance scene in Black Snake Moan is the one-on-one thing with Christina Ricci and Samuel L. Jackson later with the thunder crashing, and that's not really a concert scene. Also, we heard from Kevin Crossman. He hates our art house marathons, but he loved your top five lists last week, Maddie. So,
well, nicely thank
done.
You, thank you, because I was so tortured. I felt so bad because I thought it sounded so pedestrian, but it's so glad to know that I have a fan out there.
Yeah, at least one person really appreciated
right.
it. Actually, many people did, and we will get to a lot of your concert scene feedback on next week's show. We got a lot we want to cram into this show, including a quick recap of our time at the Sarasota Film Festival.
By the sea, yes. By the beautiful sea.
And really, that is where we spent most of our time.
Yes.
We're not going to pretend that we were in there like we are at Sundance or Toronto watching four or five movies a day. We were there for 4 or 5 days. I think we both saw 5 films. So again, it was really about getting away, having some fun with the family, including Uncle Maddie.
You just need to relax, man.
Yeah,
I have
I tried.
To say, the only time I was uncomfortable was when your son called me daddy.
And the sad part is, this actually happened.
I know.
He's not exaggerating.
Oh, I loved it.
So I'm not at home enough, obviously, there. Let's get on to better topics here. The films we saw. We did both see 5 movies. We saw 2 in common. We'll get to here in a minute. The 3 that you saw, Maddie, without me. Certifiably Jonathan, The Deal, and Stranded, I Came from a Plane That Crashed in the Mountains, a film I saw at Sundance. So of those 3, rank them for us. What stood out for you?
All right, coming in, 1, it is Stranded. Your recommendation was right on. I did love this film. And what struck me, I forgot that these kids, well, they were kids basically when they crashed, were university students.
Yep.
And just how eloquent they were in speaking about the subject. It wasn't about the sensationalistic sort of cannibalism. I just loved
the
way.
This is the Uruguayan soccer team
exactly.
that crashed. Actually, or is it the rugby team? I'm forgetting now.
Yeah.
But they crashed in the Andes Mountains and were there for an ungodly amount of time, 70-some days. I can't remember now since I saw it at Sundance. But I'm really glad that you had a similar experience that I did.
Really, really nice. Coming in at 2 was The Deal. It's a sort of Bill Macy scripted film. He also stars in it along with Meg Ryan, who, I'm sorry, I love Meg Ryan, but she needs to cut it with the plastic surgery.
Not so
and
good,
I
huh?
hate to be so superficial, but I really noticed it. I did like this film. It's sort of, it's about movie making.
Mm-hmm.
There are some, some subtle fun parts about it that work, and it's kind of a Mehmetian script a little bit, but it doesn't build really well. We've been teaching a class about screwball comedies, and this could have been a great screwball comedy, but it didn't embrace the madness, especially at the beginning of the film, to make it really strong.
And this is a film that played at Sundance along with What Just Happened, the
yeah.
Barry Levinson film, another Hollywood insider flick. Of those two, which one was better?
I gotta go with the Levinson flick.
Really?
I sort of love the subtlety and the sophistication of The Deal, but in the end, there was just a little bit too much Bill Macy trying to get with Meg Ryan, and we just sort of linger on that relationship.
Okay, so that means coming in last, certifiably Jonathan.
I love Jonathan Winters. I really do. I love his comedy. Unfortunately, this just smacks of desperation. It's sort of a pseudo-documentary about Jonathan Winters wanting to hang his painting. He's a painter now, wants his paintings to hang in the MoMA, and oh, God, this thing really is terrible. And he tries to bring all these comics together. They're sort of paying homage to him by appearing in this film. It's really bad. But, the Sarasota audiences, ate it up.
Well,
they
speaking of that, you went with your family, including your mom, Sharon, Mrs. Robinson, Jesus loves her more than she will know,
right.
And my wife and kids do as well because we got to stay at the condo
on
the beach.
Thank you
and
so
have a
much.
Blast.
And now I only get 3 phone calls a day asking where her grandchildren
Why
are.
Why haven't you met a nice girl
did they,
yet,
did
Maddie?
Did they have to call her Grandma Robinson?
I know. They loved it.
Oh,
they loved
man.
It. They made friends with Mrs. Robinson down there.
All right, fine. Well, let's move on to your three. The three you saw, American Teen, the documentary, I Can No Longer Hear the Guitar, and At the Death House Door. Why don't you rank them, please?
Well, I'll try to build some suspense here. I'll start with the worst of the three, and it would be I Can No Longer Hear the Guitar, which
Wait,
is
one
a
of the
film...
best films of the 90s.
Well, according to the description, you get these festival booklets. It's criminally underseen. It's a Philippe Gorel film from 1991, based loosely, or I don't know how loosely, but it's based on his experiences with Nico, the German actress and singer. And I did not get this film. It was a French film to the bone, and I love French films, but sort of the stereotype of, you know, these sort of intellectuals sitting around talking about the meaning of love in really lofty philosophical terms and drinking a lot and doing some drugs. They were obviously having a sort of revisitation. They were trying to bring this film back to light because it has been underseen, hasn't really been available in America. I'm glad I saw it, but it didn't do a whole lot for me. The other two films I saw, and this is really the great thing about these festivals. You've certainly had this experience. You get to see a lot of great documentaries that you may not otherwise get to see, that may not get a big theatrical release. And At the Death House Door is actually a film that you may see in theaters because it's done by the guys Peter Gilbert and Steve James who did Hoop Dreams. And this is a look at the death penalty in Texas. But really, their way into it, rather than just focusing on the death penalty as this big topic or focusing on the crime of a person who was killed, murdered by the state of Texas, even though it looks like he was pretty much innocent, those stories have kind of been done. And so they took a more nuanced, focused look, and they focused on the chaplain who, at this Huntsville prison, was the guy who walked something like 160 prisoners to death and spent their last days with them. And when he got back to his house, he would decompress by recording an audio tape of his experiences with them that day. And so you've got all this tape, this great audio that you get to hear. And the character himself, Carol Pickett, I know it's Pickett, I may be getting his first name wrong, but just a fascinating character. And so I really did enjoy that film, though it's not an enjoyable, entertaining film, but really illuminating. The last film, I'll just say American Teen. This is one we're definitely going to review on the show, so I'm not going to say really anything specific about it. By Nanette Burstein. It's a documentary that looks at these 4 teens, really more than that, 5 or 6 it focuses on, in this Indiana town in their senior year of high school. And I heard a lot of buzz about it at Sundance. I know audiences were reacting to it. I had a great response to this film. I really was impressed with this documentary and very moved by it, actually, and look forward to discussing it in August when it opens here in Chicago.
Well, let's discuss the 2 films briefly that we actually enjoyed together. Encounters at the End of the World, directed by one of our favorites here, Mr. Werner Herzog. In fact, Werner Herzog plays a part in both of these films. Mm-hmm. Of course, here he goes to Antarctica, and he takes a look at sort of these modern-day conquistadors who basically gone off the grid as much as they can. Absolutely beautiful photography. Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I didn't love it. Yeah. I think it is interesting how he tries to fit it into the Herzogian view of nature, where he's got some really provocative questions to ask, and he sees nature as sort of hostile.
Yeah, but they're playful, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are.
That's what I
he's
love about
fun.
I love about Herzog. He has this curiosity that you and I or the average guy is, and he's going to ask those questions. And I just love the bit about the penguins. And that was actually the most touching moment for me when, you know, he focuses on that one penguin that just for some reason is going to head off to the mountains.
It's really funny that you say that, because Herzog makes a joke throughout about the fact that he was not going to make a penguin picture.
Yeah.
But then he ends up focusing a little bit on these penguins. And I agree with you. At the end of the year, when we're doing our best moments of the year, I'm telling you right now, this moment where a penguin, for no good reason at all, strays away from the rest of the penguins and just walks off into nothing.
Exactly, because then you get the parallel also with all these interviews with all these sort of great characters that have gone to Antarctica. Why? What's their story? I don't think all of them are that interesting. I think Herzog kind of figures that out. They're kind of kooky, but I think Herzog sort of figures that out. It's really not driving the movie as much as the photography and some of the nature stuff here.
Right, and I do think that the one thing for me is it felt a little sprawling. I'm not sure that he knew exactly the story he wanted to tell.
Yeah.
Which kind of adds to a little bit of the dynamic of fun. He's discovering things as he goes, but I didn't really feel like it was focused enough. I will say, though, that having Werner Herzog as your guide through anything is worth watching.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, and that's what, you know, the beauty of Errol Morris is. He'll come to a project not knowing really exactly where he's going to go, and then he's going to find somebody. He's going to find something, just a thread that's really interesting, and follow that.
Yeah, absolutely. The last film, then, we'll discuss. Werner Herzog is a character in
yes.
the film, Mr. Lonely, Harmony Korine's film. I'm going to throw this back on you with
yes,
relish.
Sir. Yes, sir.
How did you react to Mr. Lonely? Because this is a pretty crazy
I'm
movie.
I'm telling you, give me a week with this film. I will turn it into something good. Unfortunately, it just falls in love with itself. My God, it just sort of languishes on the screen. Get over it. It's not that beautifully shot. It's not that clever, but there is the semblance. There's a skeleton of a story there. I love sort of the quirkiness of it. I actually love the sort of Werner Herzog part in it. It's
yeah.
sort of the flying nuns.
It doesn't really fit in, but it does
but
in a more
it does in
metaphysical
the end.
Way.
I'm
yeah.
telling you, Hollywood, just give me a week with this thing. I'm going to turn out a good film.
Well, Harmony Korine certainly is not Hollywood, and there's nothing Hollywood about this film. Maybe if it was more Hollywood, it would have been a little more interesting, but this film is about, ostensibly, a Michael Jackson impersonator, who's Mr.
Right.
Lonely, living in Paris. He meets a Marilyn Monroe impersonator, played by Samantha Morton. She's amazing, I think. She's really good. She's married to a Charlie Chaplin impersonator. They have a child who is a
Shirley Temple impersonator.
Exactly. And they live in this commune of other impersonators,
right.
Abe Lincoln, James Dean. And really, that's kind of the story. That really is the
right,
essence of it.
But people do change. There is a journey. And unfortunately, the Michael Jackson character, who is sort of our guide through this, it's his change that's the weakest.
Yeah, it is. But I sort of had fun with this movie. At some point, you just sort of had to embrace the
yeah.
weirdness and the oddity. And I did have fun with it. Is it a film I recommend everyone go out and see? No, but it's probably worth checking
yeah,
out.
Go check out the Maddie's director cut. All right, I'm going to take 45 minutes off that sucker. It is going to fly, and you're going to enjoy it. Unfortunately, it falls in love with how clever it's being.
I haven't done any real work in a very long time. I pretend that I'm busy, that I'm working. I'm not doing anything.
The Visitor is the latest release from actor, writer, director Tom McCarthy, whose acting credits include Flags of Our Fathers and Michael Clayton. You may have seen him recently playing the ethically challenged journalist on the final season of HBO's The Wire. His directing debut was the acclaimed 2003 film The Station Agent, which he also wrote. Now with The Visitor, McCarthy takes on complex issues related to immigration and ethnicity. Richard Jenkins plays the role of Walter Vail, a man in his 60s in search of some meaning in his life. Hiam Ubbas plays the mother of an illegal immigrant who Walter finds shacked up in his usually vacant Manhattan apartment. Film Spotting recently had a chance to sit down with them, and Jenkins began by explaining why he wanted to make this movie.
I kind of knew I had to do it when he sent it to me and I read it. I mean, it was from that moment I was just so excited. But at the same time, he had mentioned that he had written it with me in mind. And before I read it, that made me nervous because I thought, what if I read it and find that I can't bring anything to this? You know, it was a little intimidating. But when I read it, I just loved it. I loved it from the minute I read the first draft all through the permeation. It changed a lot during rehearsals and even in shooting it changed. I liked it more and more and more every time Tom changed it. So, you know, from the very beginning, I didn't have to be convinced, I'll tell you that, yeah.
In my case, it started really very early because Tom called me. In fact, my agent set a meeting with Tom in Paris where we sat and talked about a lot of things but not about the movie itself. In fact, he was writing the story at that time. He still wasn't finished writing. So we just kind of sat down and talked about a lot of stuff, a lot of things. He told me that he'd seen me in movies and that he had that desire to work with me and that he's still writing this story, but he doesn't know where it's going to go. So he wasn't really kind of offering me a role, but more like he asked me a lot of questions really about the character, which at that time I didn't know what he was digging for, but he would ask me a lot of questions about a traditional woman being immigrant in the States, what would I think she would be doing, reacting to this or that. And we met again 2 days after, and only 3 months after I got the script. But like when I read the script the first time, I really did feel like a lot of layers of the character were built up upon what we were saying at that first meeting. So once you read it and you just like get to know the other characters as well, it's such a beautiful story, it's such a beautiful script that there's no way you can say no to it, you know?
Working with Tom, it is a process of collaboration. But you're really collaborating on his vision. And it's what Tom wants to say in the film that he uses your collaboration for. And it was great. It was really great because I always had the feeling as he was helping us that we were helping him. You know, I mean, I worked with some great directors, some who are not actors, who are fabulous with actors, you know. So I don't know, because he's an actor, that's why he works so well with us. I'm not sure. But it's part of who he is, so I'm sure it had something to do with it. So I felt really thrilled that we could help him make the film he wanted to make.
But I think what really helped us a lot, and the biggest difference with him and maybe a lot of other directors I worked with, is the rehearsal times that we just spent together. You know, like, we rehearsed for 2 weeks where we just, like, sat around a table. We got to know each other, to meet. Each was talking about his character. And from listening, really from listening to each other. And it is an acting method, you know. The listening thing is a method for actors to be doing. So he was a great listener as well at that time. And, you know, a lot of the things changed in the movie, like, slowly with the time, because we were all collaborating on the same level to get this movie to wherever Tom wanted to take it, right? But, like, at the same time for him, it was as well to help us bring him to get to the movie that he wanted to do. And for actors, it's such a great pleasure to be able to work layers of your character without necessarily, you know, like, if it says that you should cry, it should see you crying, but sometimes it's much more interesting to hold your tears rather than just let them go. So, like, everything was really kind of open to a lot of suggestions and a lot of discovery of how we deal with it as actors. Tom was so clear about what he wanted and so knowing where he's going with that. So his way of manipulating us around him and collaborating with us, there's a lot of opening, a lot of freedom, but at the same time, you know, if it doesn't suit the main line of the character or the movie in general, he just will bring you. He just, like, had that strength to bring you back to whatever you should be doing, and suddenly you believe in it and you just do it. What did I learn from this movie? I think it's very hard to say what did I learn. I think I just, like, confirmed things that are already there in me. You know, the immigration issue I know about. Like, the thing that I really most like in life, and I just, like, kind of like to keep it as it is in my artistic journeys, is just, like, connection, connection, connection. Be in the place of the other. Just love the other as he is. Stop judging, you know. Stop just wanting to put labels and people in boxes, you know. Like, everybody is free to live wherever he wants to live in the way he sees life is right for him. So you have no right as a human being to take that right from the other person, right? So it's just, like, a more confirmation, really, about my beliefs, the way I am in real life.
Something I've always believed, and this movie confirmed it for me, is that when you know somebody, your thoughts on an issue change. When they're involved, then it's no longer just a political issue, and you look at it in a totally different way. So the ability to stand in somebody else's shoes and see it from their point of view, I think, is really important. And it's something I've always believed, but this film did confirm it for me.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Our sincere thanks to Joe Dassault at Chicago Public Radio for his wonderful work on that interview. The Visitor is out now in limited release. We look forward to seeing it. If you get a chance to check it out, let us know your thoughts. feedback@filmspotting.net. It's time for another quick break. When we return, Massacre Theater and Maddie and I put on our best high heels and get our hair and makeup done for the Matadors, our Pedro Almodovar Marathon Awards. Stay with us.
My hair spins round with a twist of love now.
What's the matter with you?
I'm scared.
Scared? God damn.
I don't belong here.
You belong here as much as anybody does. Now try to quit that complaining and relax.
I ain't ready. I ain't paying my dues to be here.
By God, we'll pay them later on, then.
Where are you going?
There's one thing I can't stand, Loretta. It's a nervous damn woman.
Don't leave.
I ain't leaving you. I'm just going to go out there and give you some fresh air.
Welcome back to Film Spotting. Time now for Massacre Theater, the part of the show wherein Adam and I massacre a beloved screenplay, and you, our beloved listeners, get a chance at winning a free beloved DVD of your own. Now, last week, Adam and I massacred the scene you just heard with Sissy Spacek and the great Tommy Lee Jones from Coal Miner's Daughter, a tie-in, of course, with our top five concert scenes. Adam, I have to say, we got a lot of wrong entries on this one.
We got a lot of wrong entries this week. A lot of people guessing Walk the Line or maybe Nashville, which, as a general rule, if it's going to be later in the top five, we probably won't use it for Massacre Theater. But what I was really surprised about, Maddie, I have to say, the dearth of responses this week. This was the smallest entered Massacre Theater since you came aboard, and maybe going back 100 or so shows.
Wow.
Maybe a lot of people out there, we either picked a really hard scene, or a lot of people haven't seen Coal Miner's Daughter.
You gotta see it. You gotta see it.
Sissy Spacek, you got Tommy Lee Jones, Levon Helm as her father. It's a great film.
Oh, it's a terrific film. All right, Adam, we'll reach into the film spotting hat and pick out this week's winner.
And the winner is Abby Olsies. How do you think I should say that, Maddie?
Olchezy?
Olchezy in Lawrence, Kansas. We apologize, Abby. Congratulations. Email feedback@filmspotting.net, and we will set you up with the DVD of your choice.
Betty.
Yeah, Betty. Look, look, you don't rush it. I don't rush it.
Okay?
Now, we're going to play this nice and close, just like in the movies, okay?
Moving on now to this week's edition of Massacre Theater. It ties in with the theme of the show a little bit.
Loosely.
Vacation movies.
Loosely.
More specifically, though, think about our trip to the Sarasota Film Festival. Maybe you'll get the connection there. So, Maddie, you started off. I'm going to give you the action. And action.
Okay. What's my motivation? The acquisition of money to collect, to inflict pain if I have to. Guy splits with 15 large of my money, I go after him. What the hell do you think I do?
Blank. Look at me.
I'm looking at you.
No, look at me the way I'm looking at you. Put it in your eyes. You're mine, asshole, without saying it.
Okay. How about this?
What are you telling me? That you're sleepy? That you want to go to bed?
Wait. Okay.
Now you're squinting like you need glasses.
Well, what do you want?
Look at me.
What?
What I'm thinking is, you're mine. I effing own you. What I'm not doing is feeling one way or another about it. You see? You're not a person to me. You're an entry in my book, that's all. You're just a guy who owes me money, that's all.
How about this?
Ooh, wow. Not bad.
And
scene. That was atrocious. If you know what film we just massacred, email your name, location, and the movie's title to feedback@filmspotting.net by Wednesday, April 22nd. Maddie, I really shouldn't be the one doing the funny voices.
No, you really shouldn't, but I love it. Thank you, Mr. Kata. The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced on next week's show. To get official Massacre Theater rules, please visit us at www.filmspotting.net.
Dicen que por las noches no más se le iba en puro llorar.
Some music there from Pedro Almodovar's film Talk to Her, a movie that I have a feeling is going to come up at least once or twice here as we get into The Matadors. This is our best of the Pedro Almodovar Marathon Awards. We're just going to quickly go through these here, but we do like to close out our marathons by highlighting some of our favorite performances, some of our favorite moments. And we do have to thank, in our message boards, the user named Dracula for giving us the name The Matadors. We also had suggestions from listeners, including The Moms. Obviously, Almodovar is big into his mother, the Franciscas, which is actually his mother, or Francisca, I'm not sure. And then even The Women Are Beautiful was an option, which really does fit with Almodovar. But we like The Matador's good connection to Talk to Her, as well as to Spain in general, of course. So that's what we're going with. Maddie, who gets your Matador for Best Actress from our marathon?
Cecilia Roth, All About My Mother. I mean, there are so many strong female characters, of course, here littered throughout this entire canon, but she's the strongest and I think the most authoritative. And I just love the way that she, you know, handled problems, the way that she dealt with things around her. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, there's an amazing tenderness about her, and I agree, she gets mine as well. Love Cecilia Roth as the main character, the mother in All About My Mother. And we should mention the five films that made up this marathon. All About My Mother, Bad Education, The Flower of My Secret, Live Flesh, and Talk to Her. Those were the five. So with that in mind now, Maddie, your best actor went to.
Has to go to Dario Grandinetti for Talk to Her. I pretty much talked about this when we aired that show. I was so struck, again, how he's dealing with this sort of melodramatic world around him. And that's the thing. He's not melodramatic at all. A lot of his characters will tend to go this sort of more dramatic route, but he just plays it absolutely cool, even though when he's losing it inside.
Mm-hmm. And he was definitely a strong consideration for me. I'm going to go ahead and go with Gael Garcia Bernal. I praised him last week on the show as Angel, as Juan, as Zahara in the film Bad Education, the last movie on our marathon. But this is a good time. I want to mention one email here, Maddie, we got from Diego in Buenos Aires, Argentina. He wrote in and said that during our discussion of Talk to Her, we both had very kind words about the actor that plays Marco in the movie and how he manages to perfectly convey the inner struggles of his character using little more than subtle facial expressions and sparse words. You both mentioned that his name escaped you at that moment, and I wanted to remedy that. That is the wonderful, as you said, Maddie, Dario Grandinetti, who hails from my country, Argentina. Incidentally, Cecilia Roth, who we both just praised for her performance in All About My Mother, is also an Argentine, so credits to Almodovar for spotting some of the great acting talent that exists in our little neck of the woods way down south.
Hear, hear.
Well said.
Viva Argentina.
That brings us to our favorite transgendered performance. Maddie, I guess you sat this one out. You didn't feel like picking one.
There were so many. Which one?
Well, I did, of course, consider Antonia San Juan as Agrado from All About My Mother. She has a very memorable scene on the stage talking to
the audience. You got to go with Javier Camara, right?
I'm going with, of course, he was hard, too. He was a real discovery
Paquito,
for us as Paquito in this marathon. He's great in Talk to Her. But I had to go again with Bernal. I mean, there's something about his performance as Zahara. He totally transforms into that character. I got to give it to him. Okay, best cinematography. Did you do this one, Maddie?
No,
because
I didn't.
We both mentioned on the last show that you thought Live Flesh was your favorite. Mine was Bad Education. That settles that. We have two other categories then in the Matadors. Your favorite Almodovar moment, that moment or scene that for you really just typified everything you love about Almodovar.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I do want to give some praise to the concert scene from Talk to Her, the movie within a movie, also in Talk to Her. But I have to go with Gael Garcia Bernal as Zahara, as Ignacio, as Zahara. Again, it's just sort of encapsulates the story within a story, within a story. Just
all
sort
those
of that
meta
craze
levels.
In it. Absolutely love it. And of course, you've got the transgendered politics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. In a movie that
you
I ended
love.
Up not really not loving.
Well, and how coincidental then that my Almodovar moment came from the film I didn't love nearly as much as you did, Live Flesh. I'm actually going with the opening sequence of Live Flesh, the great dystopian setup there of, you know, we're in Franco's Spain, and it's almost like 1984, very mm-hmm. imposing and very dark. And then we get that juxtaposed with the absurdity of the landlady and Penelope Cruz trying to get to the hospital and delivering a baby on an empty city bus. And it's really funny. And then there's just such a mixture of tones and style there, which you get from Almodovar throughout, as we saw. And the amazing crane shot, the cinematography where it starts way back from the bus, which is a great, actually, way to handle that delivery. You don't have to show the delivery. It happens from a distance. But then we get closer and closer as it happens in real time. And I really just thought that whole sequence was amazing and kind of took me into that Almodovar world where I thought anything could happen. So my moment is from Live Flesh, which brings us to The Matador 4, Best Picture.
And of course, I got to give it to Talk to Her, which is now one of my favorite films. I recommend it to everybody. And it just sort of speaks to the power of art. You see it within the film, how it transforms you. I was so moved by this film, especially with the art pieces within the art pieces. Just gorgeous work. Probably one of my favorite films of the past 10 years, easy.
You were really moved by it. I wasn't as moved, but I really enjoyed it as well. Talk to Her. Habla con ella, which is also fun to say, is my favorite film from the Almodovar Marathon as well. And I want to briefly mention another email. Jeff T. in Queens, New York. Your discussion of Talk to Her embodied everything I get out of listening to you every week, happily and religiously. This film changed my life and the way I watch movies, and I couldn't be happier to hear you both were swept away to thank God, thank Pedro, and thank you. Thank you, Jeff, for a great email. And Maddie, I do want you to read part of this one here, at least from Malcolm in Seattle, who also went into our discussion of Talk to Her with great trepidation, worried about how we would respond to it. And he was fortunately gratified in the end.
Yeah, he has to say, I have to be honest, when you all first mentioned you'd be doing an Almodovar marathon, I lean my head toward the speaker to hear you utter the words, talk to her, in the same way a lottery ticket holder moves a bit closer to the TV screen to better read their future in those little ping pong balls of promise. So when you open the marathon segment with Caetano Veloso's hypnotic voice singing a song from the film, and then Maddie's charming After Three gin and tonics voice proclaiming, talk to her, one of the greatest films I've ever seen, I immediately felt like getting those hair plugs I know I deserve, opening a mediocre drinking establishment, and buying a Cadillac. In short, I felt like a lottery winner. I love this film, and I want everyone else to love it too. By the end, I feel as though I've been moved rather than taught. The dance, the songs, the drama, they all linger as fond memories. Well, Malcolm, I want you to do my reviews every week. I love that email.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to go in your signature here on Gmail here pretty soon, the three gin and tonic voice. But isn't it great to know that we can actually bring some kind of joy like this to people who enjoy listening to us talk about Almodovar's films and actually at least just enjoy the movie as much as they hope we do?
And I want to stress what I was really surprised by, and maybe because I was not familiar with his work that much at all, was how accessible these films really are.
Same with Bergman.
If you're daunted by Bergman or those sort of black and white French films, here, start with Almodovar. Just sort of take baby steps. You'll love them.
Yeah, absolutely. And unlike those French films or those Swedish films like Bergman made, which do tend to be slow and oppressive by design, Almodovar's all about plot. He's all about story. He loves those machinations, and it really moves along. So I think everyone can get into Almodovar's films, and if you haven't, you should check them out. And we'll find out how many people need to check out Almodovar's films, Maddie, as we share our poll question for this week. We told you what our favorite Almodovar film is, at least of our marathon. We want to know what your favorite Almodovar movie is. Here they are in alphabetical order.
Is it All About My Mother, Bad Education, The Flower of My Secret, Live Flesh, Talk to Her, Volver, one of his earlier films, or Wish I Had an Opinion?
Which either finished first or second, I can't recall, in our Bergman Marathon poll question when we concluded that. We hope many of you have seen some of these Almodovar films and do have an opinion, but if you don't be ashamed, share it. And we will share these results on next week's show. And speaking of next week, or at least beyond, that brings us to our next marathon. Last week on the show, we took listener suggestions. We gave you the poll question. We asked you, after Almodovar, what should be our next marathon? And the listeners really have spoken here. I'll tell you the options. They were 70s action / grindhouse films, 70s sci-fi films, Angry Young Men, that's Lindsay Anderson, Tony Richardson, Blaxploitation, or Powell and Pressburger. Maddie, what are we going to be talking about?
I am working on my Charlton Heston. People, they're eating people. Number one with a bullet, 70s sci-fi coming in with 51%. Really, the rest of the pack really lagging behind. 70s action, 18%. Angry Young Men, 11%. Tied with Blaxploitation, 11%. Paul Pressburger coming in at 9%.
I know some of our really devoted listeners, especially on our message boards, disappointed to see Powell and Pressburger that low, but apparently a lot of love for the 70s era and some of these films. We're going to check out the sci-fi movies, and we'll actually give you the rundown here. We're not going to start it on next week's show. We're going to have a one-week break. We'll dive in a couple weeks. And the movies we are going to watch, the six films that will be part of this 70s sci-fi marathon, we've got The Omega Man with Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston.
The Andromeda Strain, Silent Running, Soylent Green, Logan's Run, and David Bowie in The Man Who Fell to Earth. And we have to thank Adam Mark in Tamarack, Florida. He was the listener who initially suggested this marathon. 51% of Film Spotting listeners who voted were all about this marathon. We're looking forward to it.
Hey, man, I need an excuse to see Almodovar. I need an excuse to see these films.
I do, too. Absolutely. I haven't seen any of those movies, which is really embarrassing to admit. But the fact is I haven't, and I look forward to checking out all of them. Thanks again to everyone who sent in your great marathon suggestions.
Okay, time for one last quick break. I think it was Plato that said, vacation, all I ever wanted, vacation, all I ever needed.
Have to get away.
Our top five vacation movies are up next. Time now to take a look at what is new on DVD, brought to you by TLAvideo.com, the world of film at your fingertips.
Coming out this Tuesday, let's start with The Orphanage, a movie we strongly recommended to our listeners. I know many of them have checked it out, a scary, haunting film.
You cannot watch this thing with the lights off.
Yeah, and it includes an audio commentary with the director Juan Antonio Bayona and the writer Sergio Sanchez, and I'm going to stop for a second and pick these names up off the floor, but as you'll recall, I managed to have lunch with these two guys. They were fantastic to talk to, really interesting guys. It should be a fun commentary to listen to and a fun, scary movie. Also, starting out in the evening, the Andrew Wagner film, and it includes an audio commentary by Andrew Wagner. This is Frank Langella, who stars in this movie, actually my favorite male performance of the year. So
that's right.
Now you can go out and see, starting out in the evening, again, the anti-Daniel Day-Lewis, the complete polar opposite in terms of performances there. Check that one out. Also, Cloverfield, a movie we did both recommend. You can check that out. And then Charlie Wilson's War, a movie maybe we only recommend to see on DVD, certainly at the most, the Mike Nichols film. And then The Savages,
a movie don't recommend seeing in any format, Laserdisc, Blu-ray, or otherwise.
It does include a featurette and bonus footage, which I know we really want to check more of The Savages, but we really were kind of alone on that one, so take it for whatever it's worth. You can get all the movies we mention here in this segment at great prices through TLAvideo.com. Just click on the Film Spotting Movie Store link at filmspotting.net. Now, Maddie, before we get to donations, we do have to announce the winners of our last recasting contest in conjunction with our great sponsors over at Spout.com. It was the Princess Bride recasting contest. We have two winners here. Let's go ahead and share the winners' names and some of the names that made up their cast as they found new people to put in the roles from this classic Rob Reiner film. The first winner here, our grand prize winner, goes to Bentham's Head, and you can check out all the entries at recast.spout.com. He's got Matthew Good in the role of Wesley, Rachel McAdams as Buttercup, Benicio del Toro as Inigo Montoya, Steve Coogan as Prince Humperdinck, which I would really like to see, actually.
But what really impresses me is Michael Moore as Vizzini Yao Ming as Fezzik. I love that, but here, Stephen Colbert as the impressive clergyman. Terrific. And Sherry O'Terry as the ancient boor.
I know.
This guy's great. This guy's onto something.
Yeah, that's why he won the grand prize, picked by the fine people over at Spout. But we certainly agree. Congratulations to Bentham's Head. You're going to get some great Spout American Apparel swag. And also, part of the reason Bentham's Head won, we just got to mention this, and we encourage you to go check out the full list, as we said, but he also decided to make the perfect Robert Altman edition of The Princess Bride, recasting it. Elliot Gould as Wesley, Shelley Duvall as Buttercup, Keith Carradine as Inigo Montoya, Tim Robbins as Prince Humperdinck, Michael Murphy as
the Count.
Oh,
man, we can find room for Lily Tomlin and Henry Gibson as well. Come
on. Sterling Hayden in there, Geraldine Chaplin. Good stuff. Congratulations. Our second place winner goes to El Cid 2002. He's got Hugh Dancy as Wesley. We're going for the young British guys here, obviously. Evan Rachel Wood as Buttercup. I like that. A good choice.
Well, you like Evan Rachel Wood in anything.
I do. And my boy Gael Garcia Bernal as Inigo Montoya. Hugh Grant as Prince Humperdinck. Rufus Sewell as the Count.
Some really good
choices
there. I like it when Rufus Sewell gets more work.
Ricky Gervais as the albino. So we really do want to congratulate El Cid 2002, and thank everyone who managed to go over to recast.spout.com and take part in this fun contest. And the fun continues, Maddie, with our next recasting contest. You can get your choices in by April 30th. We are now going to recast Ghostbusters.
What?
Yes, we are going to recast Ghostbusters. And
what?
I know. And this is why it's going to be fun.
This is why it's going to be fun. Yeah, please explain this to me.
The guys at Spout did not want to do this contest because they think it's blasphemy to recast Bill Murray.
Yeah.
How do you recast Bill Murray?
Well, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, Rick Moranis.
Why touch any of that? Well, I agree, but let's have some fun with it. Who do you put in that Peter Venkman role? Maybe you can't put anyone. You got to stick with Bill Murray. I don't know. I'm looking forward to some inspired choices here.
You better friggin' wow me. You got to bring the A game.
Okay.
Here.
Well, take part in this contest. Go to recast.spout.com and share who you think you would cast if you could remake Ghostbusters. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Time now for donations. We want to thank everyone who found their way over to filmspotting.net and through some of their hard-earned dollars our way in support of the show. We are humbled, of course, by each and every single donation. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you to Justin in beautiful Portland, Oregon, the Rose City. David in the Queen City of Cincinnati, Ohio. Karen in Mason, Ohio, home of something spectacular, I'm sure. Don in the Music City of Nashville, Tennessee. Carla in Munich. Catherine in Mundelein, Illinois. Jean in Spokane Valley, Washington. Robert in West Hampstead, London, a Silver Club donor. Thank you all. Remember that for every $10 you donate, your name is entered into the Film Spotting Hat, and at the end of the month, we pick a name, and you get to pick a film for us to review on an upcoming edition of Film Spotting After Hours. If you'd like to donate, go to filmspotting.net and click on the Donation tab at the top of the page.
I'm feeling an After Hours edition maybe next week.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Hopefully.
Certainly in the next two.
Well, we're busy men right now.
We are.
We just got back from vacation and a little Sarasota Film Festival. We're teaching a class,
yep,
which we love. It's going
mm-hmm.
great. Right now, we're stretched thin.
It's
we're
true.
Stretched thin.
You are listening to Film Spotting with Adam and Maddie, and it's top five time this week. We decided we would do our top five vacation movies, having just returned from Sarasota, where we had a little bit of R&R, but also a perfect tie-in with the film Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which we reviewed earlier in the show. Jason Segel in that film trying to get away to Hawaii, of course. So, Maddie, how did you form your list? This was your idea, I will say, and at first I was pretty apprehensive. I had a hard time coming up with my list. In the end, I'm pretty satisfied with it. How did your list come out?
Well, actually, I threw down the gauntlet this week because I trotted out five comedies last week.
Yes.
As I was making this list, I said, no comedies this week.
Wow.
I took one look at my list and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it, because otherwise it's going to become the vacation memorial list, the Clark Griswold memorial list.
Right. I mean, what more do you need from a top five? You've got Vegas Vacation, you've got European Christmas Vacation,
exactly,
and the original, right?
So, all right, I'm not going to give away what my trend is, but I think you'll be able to pick up on
it. I love the fact that you're setting all these restrictions now, all these trends.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, number five, Open Water.
Wow.
One of those movies, I think, you only really are going to watch once, I think. And you don't like claustrophobia.
Mm-mm.
So I'm wondering, have you seen this film?
No, and I don't like sharks either.
Ah, see, I was wondering how you would react to this film, but I really like it. It's sort of, it's low budget. These two tourists that go to Australia and, of course, get left behind from their snorkeling adventure. And that's about all there really is.
Well, it really is. I mean, I know enough about it to know that it's a film where they get stuck out in the water, and that's pretty much what the movie gives you. And you're right, this is actually kind of a joke between me and some of my friends. I remember we were out in New York a couple of years ago, I think, to see a baseball game. We wanted to go see a movie. All my buddies wanted to go see Open Water, and I was the chicken that was like, I don't want to see this film, and I still don't want to see it.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
A lot of fun with sharks.
Well, speaking of a lot of fun, my number five here, I'm going with Funny Games. Of course, the Michael Haneke version, the remake, they're both Michael Haneke versions, but the remake, which we saw recently, still need to see the original if I can build up the courage to see that film. I have to quote here Alvy Singer from one of my favorite films, Annie Hall. The country makes me nervous. You got crickets and it's quiet. There's no place to walk after dinner. There's the screens with the dead moths behind them. Well, add to that now Peter and Paul to go with the In Cold Blood duo there, because the fact is, I will never be taking my bourgeois family out to the countryside on vacation. I didn't like it before. I like it even less now because of this film. I'm terrified.
Great pick. It might be coming up on my list here. All right. Well, my number four is The Man Who Knew Too Much, Hitchcock's 1956 remake of his own film. Jimmy Stewart on vacation has to locate his kidnapped son. By all accounts, actually, the 1934 version is better, but I just remember this as a kid. And of course, the great Doris Day singing Que Sera, Sera.
Great pick there. My number four is a film that has come up, I think, once before on a top five, and that is the Roberto Rossellini film, Voyage to Italy. This is a film with Ingrid Bergman and George Sanders playing her husband. It's about a couple. They're on their way to Naples. They're touring the Italian countryside and find their marriage kind of going to shambles. And I like this film a lot because we get to see Rossellini and his wife of 3 years at that time Bergman collaborating together, but we just recently rewatched the film Casablanca. This is like the anti-Casablanca, where you see how great Ingrid Bergman is, but she's totally de-glammed and not the Bergman we're used to seeing at all on the big screen in those classic Hollywood films. And it's also great because it's a film where the environment is truly a character in the movie. Voyage to Italy, I believe, from 1953.
All right, great pick. Well, my number three, yeah, Tom and Jerry, Beavis and Butthead, Peter and Paul terrorizing Naomi Watts, Timmy Roth.
Uh-huh.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. You thought that Funny Games made you think. I thought it made me think, but at the same time, it really, really entertained me. One of the most surprising films, I think, of the year.
Okay, some more Funny Games love here from Film Spotting. My number three, this is where I have to thank one of our listeners, Keith Knapp, and I forgot to write down his location, but I, as I said, was really struggling forming this list because I was just thinking of all these kind of obvious choices, a lot of comedies that I like but don't love, and then he reminded me of a couple of films that are going to come up as my number three and my number two. My number three is Sideways. This week is not about me. It is about you. I'm going to show you a good time. We're going to drink a lot of good wine. We're going to play some golf. We're going to eat some great food and enjoy the scenery, and we're going to send you off in style, mon frere, as Paul Giamatti says. This is a film, of course, where they try to get off to California's wine country. It's the last gasp of freedom for Thomas Hayden Church's character before he gets married. And I just think what is interesting and funny about this film is the difference in the characters, how they each have their dream vision of how this vacation is supposed to play out. And, of course, it doesn't go like that at all. I think it's also fun, of course, to see the comparison between wine snobbery and film snobbery or any kind of artistic snobbery. And I don't think that Alexander Payne mocks these characters. They're all sort of pathetic, but I empathize with them. I like Sideways. I don't know how you feel, Maddie. It's my number three.
I like Sideways. I don't love it. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of, I know Sam had a problem with Payne running out these characters and him sort of taking pot shots at them.
Yeah.
I don't really find that too much. I mean, especially not in that film, but I don't love that film. And I, right now, you kind of surprised me with that pick. I pressed why exactly it didn't register with me. It's maybe because I didn't quite get those characters. Mm. I didn't feel like I knew them, like I knew the characters, say, that we reviewed in the film tonight,
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
So,
yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, my number two, now imagine, if you will, my top five vacation comedies. Okay, my number two would have been Weekend at Bernie's, a film I don't think you like, but I absolutely
love. I loved it when I was in junior high, sure.
Hey, I love it. It's a favorite in the Robinson household, okay? And so now think of the basically polar opposite of that film. Can you think of one? What movie, perhaps, could be the polar opposite of that? But yet, I'm going to guarantee you don't like that film either.
Well, all I can say is you already said it, and I said it too. It's Funny Games. So what is it? What's your number two?
Babel.
I was afraid this was going to come up.
It proves even Brad Pitt can have bad vacations. I really did like that film. I know you didn't like it. I don't really want to open that Pandora's box and having that discussion, but I really think it's a great film.
Okay, well, we'll just move on from there to my number two. Let's play a clip.
Get this straight. Sex is everywhere, okay? It is all around us. It's not some distant destination. It's not Everest. It is right here. You have to attune yourself to it. You have to bring yourself into alignment. You have to find the zone, Nick, okay? Do that, and I promise you, a whole world will open up.
And this is the one where I really have to thank Keith for reminding me about one of my favorite films, and this is Roger Dodger. Kind of a cheat as a vacation movie, but it is a case where you've got this character who comes out from Ohio, he goes out to New York on a little trip. It's mainly an escapade just to try to have his uncle deflower him, played by Campbell Scott. But you hear there in the scene, of course, too, the wonder of New York, Campbell Scott trying to show him how sex is everywhere in New York. It's a movie I just love and think that more people need to see. This is kind of my excuse to get it on the list. Hasn't been mentioned in a while. Again, not a conventional vacation movie.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, my number two.
I do like that film. It's sort of the Auntie Mame film, if you will. All right, well, my number one, I think you guys will recognize it from this clip. That, of course, Dueling Banjos from A Little Deliverance.
Oh, yeah.
Did you pick up on the theme of my top five?
I really haven't yet.
Vacation's gone horribly.
I wondered
horribly
if that's where
wrong.
It was, but then I didn't know how some of the films all tied in. But you're right. They all managed to go terribly wrong, don't they?
Yeah, and of course everybody sort of lingers on the sensationalistic rape scene with Ned Beatty, and of course Squeal Like a Pig, and it's Burt Reynolds. But you know what? This film, you can catch it on TV a lot. It really holds up. This is really a terrific film, and if you haven't seen it, if you think it sort of lives in the realm of the cliche, I would challenge you. Go back and rewatch it. It's great.
I need to rewatch it, that John Borman film. Of course, my number one, it's an obvious pick, but it's got to be here. Let's hear a scene.
I'm going to have to hike down the road a bit and find a service station. I want you to stay here and take care of things, Russ.
You'll be okay, Dad?
Oh, sure, sure, sure. You know, I haven't had much of a chance to talk to you man to man, Russ.
Well, I've only been a man a few days, Dad.
You're growing up so damn fast. I've spent the last 15 years of my life developing newer and better food additives. I guess I miss an awful lot.
Probably should have been the National Lampoon's Vacation Memorial list, but it's got to be my number one, yeah, because it is the film that sort of defined every road trip movie for me, having seen it, you know, as a kid in grade school or whatever, and I absolutely think it's hilarious. The best film of that bunch, of course, by far.
Oh, it's
I
amazing.
Don't think it's even close.
It's amazing. I love that film. And dude, I have to tell you, you are Clark Griswold. I just went on vacation with you.
Ouch.
Now, but it's not a bad thing. I'm genetically predisposed to be Clark Griswold. The fact of the matter is he loves his kids. He loves mm-hmm. his family. He will do anything for them. Man, that's
what I'm all about the schedule. I want everything
you
to be done a certain way.
But you care about their happiness.
I do.
I love that film. I absolutely love Vacation.
Okay, well, I have to say I'm still a little bit wounded anyway. I'm surprised, though. Where was Some Like It Hot? We were going to maybe do that for Massacre Theater had we not already done it. A little bit of, again, a getaway movie.
No, I don't. Yeah, not I don't count it as a vacation movie.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going to put it in the Pantheon.
It belongs in the Pantheon?
Can I put it in the Pantheon?
It's fair enough. I don't think you have anything else.
I don't have anything
there.
Else up there.
Yeah, I'm not ready to put Major League in there as much as I love
fine,
that movie, too.
Fine. Throw me a bone.
I will. We'll go with a Billy Wilder film, Some Like It Hot.
All right, well, those are our top five vacation movies. Please send your picks or any other comments about the show to feedback@filmspotting.net.
Opening wide this weekend, Forgetting Sarah Marshall,
see
the
it.
Movie we
see it.
Absolutely
rush to see
say
it.
Go see. 88 Minutes, the Al Pacino thriller. Looking forward to that one as well. The Forbidden Kingdom, this is the movie with Jet Li and Jackie Chan. And in limited release, a lot of really interesting looking films. The Visitor, of course, we will be checking out at some point. My Blueberry Nights, this is Wong Kar-wai's first English language film. And Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden, a documentary from Morgan Spurlock. Yes, and on next week's show, we're planning to review two new movies right now. Maybe My Blueberry Nights and Where in the World, maybe a little bit of a more art house show next week. We will see. We will also share our top five most anticipated movies of the summer to all balance right. everything out.
Thanks as always to our wonderful listener volunteers, Candace, Frank, and Angela. Special thanks to Joe Dassault, Ron Jones, and Tori Malatia at Chicago Public Radio, and to the Josh Davis Band and Authentic Records. Learn more at myspace.com/thejoshdavisband. Hey, Adam, you know, all the cool kids are wearing their Film Spotting t-shirts this summer.
I heard that.
Get yours at filmspottingswag.com. For Film Spotting, I'm Matty Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. Thank you for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is brought to you by TLAvideo.com, the world of film at your fingertips. Learn more by visiting the Film Spotting movie store at filmspotting.net.
About it. You see, you're not a person to me.
No. Look at me, the way I'm looking at you.
Awesome.
I'll try it, man.
All right.